back on IRIB English Radio Islamic Upbringing. We are with Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi. We are talking about the methods for a positive upbringing of our children. Up to now, we've talked about accepting responsibility, understanding that this is our job and our duty. And the second method that we talked about is fixing ourselves to fix our children. Now, you gave an example just before the break. I want to ask a quick question about that. And that was that if you promise your child something and you break it, you've taught your child to lie or to break promises, and that at very young ages, a parent is God to children, and that God shatters when they start breaking promises. But, you know, the reality in life is that sometimes it happens, you accidentally break promises, or that you promise something that you later realize you cannot deliver. Imagine that you promise your child to buy a bicycle, and all of a sudden you go bust, and you just cannot buy a bicycle, or you're too busy, you cannot take them to the ice cream shop. How do you deal with that kind of situation?
Well, generally speaking, because I cannot, speak about a specific event. Generally speaking, that if you do something wrong, and you know it's wrong, because sometimes things, like you said, outside our, our ability or control. For example, if I promise my child an iPad, an iPhone, or a bike, or whatever, and then I get to realize, a week later, I don't have that finances. I went broke, for example. I didn't get my pay. Things happen, I have to pay rent and bills and stuff like that, and I missed that deadline of buying that thing for my child, for example. And then if I don't, then I end up breaking my promise. So in this matter, if it's outside your control, obviously, you have to speak to the child. Like, you need to speak to him in a way where you make him understand that things happened, and then, inshallah, later on you'll buy it, you still remember it. It's like you have to reinforce that you are still aware of the situation and you'll rectify it. I'll give you an example. With kids themselves, sometimes they don't understand our talk, right, because of their age. So it's very hard to explain to them what it does it mean to be financially struggling. Right? They want to understand that.
Yeah.
So sometimes you might need to be more creative. Use examples they can understand, right? Give them examples of how, for example, the money did not come to your account or something like that, right? Explain to them in a way what they can understand. Give them examples and make them understand. That's if it's outside your control. And you'll find out that when a father or a mother, they genuinely sit with the child and explain to them in a very simple manner why they couldn't do it, you'll find the child more accepting. Because sometimes I break my promise, like I go through financial difficulties myself, and when the child comes to me and says to me, "Dad, didn't you promise?" "Yeah, Habibi, I'll break it to you later, inshallah." I just shove him off. And that leaves a gap in the child's heart and the child's mind. Instead, I should bring him in, give him a hug, trying to comfort him, say to him, "I know, I understand, I am very excited to get it for you. You know, this happened and that happened, and inshallah, I promise I will get it." This, so you give them, the encouragement, give them that acknowledgement. They acknowledge your promise to them. Just don't shove it off.
And you assure them that the promise stands.
Exactly. Make sure that it still stands and you're with them. So they need to have that acknowledgement from you, and you are still persistent on upholding your promise. That is if it is outside your control.
Thank you. That's unfortunately all the time that we have. And thanks. It's a very beautiful relationship that you're talking about between parents and children. It's very genuine. It's very understanding.
Has to be.
And I think that such a relationship will develop into something super when they grow up.
Obviously, that's what we want to achieve.
All right, so that's all the time that we have. Unfortunately, if you missed the program, don't worry, you can always download an archive from our website. Simply visit parstoday.com. That's parstoday.com. Find the link of Call of Islam Radio, and you'll find our show right there with all the episodes ready for downloading. You can also email us at englishradio@irib.ir. That's englishradio@irib.ir. And find us on social media. Simply search at Call of Islam Radio on Twitter, Instagram, Telegram, and YouTube. Until next episode, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Islam solves all of its problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Mike Pence, the former U.S. vice president, has been heckled as a traitor for his refusal to overturn last year's election result during a speech to a gathering of religious conservatives. Mike Pence, who is widely seen as laying the groundwork for a White House run in 2024, had entered an auditorium in Orlando, Florida, to a standing ovation on Friday, 18th of June. But a small group began shouting abuse, including traitor, as he began a 28-minute speech. The dissenters were quickly escorted out by police. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian columnist David Smith. The piece is titled "Conservative Christians Jeer Traitor Pence for Refusing to Overturn Election." Mike Pence, the former U.S. vice president, has been heckled as a traitor for his refusal to overturn last year's election result during a speech to a gathering of religious conservatives in Florida. Mike Pence, who is widely seen as laying the groundwork for a White House run in 2024, had entered an auditorium in Orlando, Florida, to a standing ovation on Friday, 18th of June. But a small group began shouting abuse, including traitor, as he began a 28-minute speech. The dissenters were quickly escorted out by police. Earlier, in a corridor outside the ballroom, an attendee named Rick Hurley, wearing a red Make America Great Again cap, also vented his frustration over Mike Pence's role in certifying Donald Trump's defeat on 6th of January, amid false claims of voter fraud. "We need to start fighting," Rick Hurley shouted at anyone who would listen. "We need to stop being so damn nice. What the hell's going on? Why is Pence coming today? Donald Trump has his pen in his back still." Before being taken aside by police, he also remarked, "I'm ready to fight. I'm going to boo him off stage. I'll take the bullet. I'll walk to the front of the stage and look him in the eye and say, 'What are you doing here?'" In an interview, Rick Hurley said he had been at the U.S. Capitol on 6th of January. "I want to know why Mike Pence is here today," he said. "He stabbed Donald Trump in the back and took the coins like Judas." But Ralph Reed, organizer of the Faith and Freedom Coalition's annual Road to Majority conference, was at pains to give Mike Pence a warm welcome and honor him as stalwart of the Christian conservative movement. And the former vice president, who earlier this month admitted that he and his former boss, Donald Trump, may never see eye to eye on the events of 6th of January, when some Trump supporters called for him to be hanged, did not dwell on that disagreement during his remarks. He instead told the gathering, "Thank you for the privilege of serving as your vice president with Donald Trump. It was the greatest honor of my life." Pence only made a passing reference to the deadly insurrection that implied an equivalence with racial justice protests and Joe Biden's policies. Pence said, "We've all been through a lot over the past year, a global pandemic, civil unrest, a divisive election, a tragic day in our nation's capital, and a new administration intent on transforming our country." Since leaving office, Mike Pence has bought a house in Indiana, announced plans for a podcast, and signed a 2-book deal for his memoir. Despite the anger of some Trump supporters, he's seen as a potential candidate for the Republican nomination for president in 2024. His conference speech on Friday duly listed the Trump administration's achievements, from Supreme Court appointments to coronavirus vaccines, and took aim at Joe Biden for rapidly unraveling its legacy with a tidal wave of left-wing policies. Pence quipped, "Democrats have been so busy advancing their liberal agenda, sometimes I feel like the left hand doesn't know what the far left hand is doing." He went on to rail against an explosion of runaway spending, proposed tax increases, plans to cut military spending, and the cancellation of construction on Trump's signature border wall with Mexico. Literally in 5 months, they turned the most secure border in the world into the worst border crisis in American history, Pence said to applause. "You know, when I was vice president, I visited our southern border, and yes, it's past time for our current vice president to go to the border, put our policies back into effect, and end the Biden border crisis today." He also threw out false assertions to go after culture war targets currently in vogue in conservative media, including cancer culture and defund the police. Among them was critical race theory, which, developed by academics starting in the 1970s, examines how racism embedded in law and institutions creates an uneven playing field for people of color in America. Numerous Republican-controlled states have moved to ban it from being taught in schools. Mike Pence crudely misrepresented the intellectual tool by stating, "Instead of teaching all our children to be proud of their country, critical race theory teaches children as young as kindergarten to be ashamed of their skin color. Critical race theory is racism, pure and simple, and it should be rejected by every American of every race. The truth is, it's past time for America to discard the left-wing reflex to see systemic racism across our nation. As my friend Senator Tim Scott says so well, America is not a racist country. America is the most just, noble, and inclusive nation ever to exist on the face of the earth." Mike Pence also made several other wildly contentious claims. Pence closed the morning session that included Republican Senators Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, and Rick Scott, all potential rivals for the 2024 Republican nomination. Donald Trump himself has not yet declared whether he will run or whether Mike Pence would again be his running mate. Mike Pence used his prominence as a conservative radio show host in the 1990s as a springboard to a political career in 2000. He served 6 terms in the House of Representatives and was an early advocate of the Tea Party movement. Mike Pence was elected governor of Indiana in 2012.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Cause of Enmity. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. We see some people who deny a lot of truths and rise against them while not being able to find any cause for it other than ignorance and awareness. You know, they become enemy of something or someone or some scenario or some notion without knowing enough about that thing. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the first infallible Imam, has said, "People are enemies of things which they do not know or understand." See, one of the reasons why we become enemy of something or some position or some stance or some notion is our lack of information about that thing. Because we don't have comprehensive knowledge at times, we start to oppose an idea, a concept. This wise saying is especially true in religious matters. Take the case of people who are well-versed professionals in other sciences, but oppose and disbelieve when it comes to religious matters. I'm sure you have run into such people in your lifetime where, you know, in their regular, normal, average life, they're doing pretty well. They're well-educated. But when it comes to Islam, when it comes to the belief system of Islam, they all of a sudden have this sort of a negativity, right? They are not ready to embrace sometimes what Islam is saying. If we analyze this, we find that they have not really understood the depth and philosophy of religion. You know, the criteria, their standard of evaluating what Islam is saying is off, is not deep enough, right? This is one of the reasons why sometimes we see people becoming enemy of a concept or a trait or a notion. So, you know, remember, ignorance, as long as it's there, it's bound to derail us from embracing truth. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are talking about one of the causes of enmity. And we said ignorance is something where we don't understand something completely in its entirety and its comprehensive knowledge is missing, is when we become enemy of that concept or of that new idea or something that we have not known in the past and we have not experienced it. When a new idea is presented, the first reaction most people give is a negative one. If you do a survey, try floating a new idea, a new thought, something that is out of the box. One thing you realize is very consistent, especially when it comes to the commoners, the common people out there, is that they, all of a sudden, the first reaction is that they oppose the idea. Why is it happening? You have not even heard the idea in its entirety. You have not even contemplated about this concept or idea, and you're being judgmental all of a sudden. You're expressing your enmity, your opposition towards that idea. Well, it turns out that it is because of their lack of understanding, their lack of comprehensive knowledge of that concept or idea. Why are people opposed to these new concepts, new ideas, which is something out of the box? This is something for all of us to ponder about, to think about.
right? It is because, as Imam Ali alayhi salam has said, people are enemies of things which they do not know, especially in religious matters. So inshallah, let's pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to give us that knowledge through which we can see the reality of things before we come to conclusion about that particular thing, and before we take a position on that, and you know, before we express our opposition and enmity towards that particular thing. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
The limelight.
The heat wave gripping western United States is simultaneously breaking hundreds of temperature records, exacerbating a historic drought and priming the landscape for a summer and fall of extreme wildfire. The article you're about to hear has been written by the Guardian journalist Manvi Singh. The piece is titled "Potentially the worst drought in 1,200 years. Scientists under scorching U.S. heat wave." Heat wave currently gripping southwestern United States is simultaneously breaking hundreds of temperature records, exacerbating a historic drought and priming the landscape for a summer and autumn of extreme wildfires. Salt Lake City hit a record-breaking 107 degrees Fahrenheit, 42 degrees Celsius, while in Texas and California, power grid operators are asking residents to conserve energy to avoid rolling blackouts and power outages. And all of this before we've even reached the hottest part of the summer. Among the 40 million Americans enduring the triple-digit temperatures are scientists who study droughts and the climate. They'd long forewarned of this crisis, and now they're living through it. The Guardian spoke with researchers and academics across western United States about how they're coping with the extreme heat wave. Kathleen Johnson, an associate professor of earth system science at the University of California at Irvine, said, "I feel a little bit lucky because I'm in Orange County, relatively close to the coast, so the temperatures are not as severe here as they are in other parts of California and western United States. I'm worried about this summer. This doesn't bode well in terms of what we can expect with wildfire and a worsening drought. This current drought is potentially on track to become the worst that we've seen in at least 1,200 years, and the reason is linked directly to human-caused climate change. As a paleoclimatologist, my main point always is that we're able to look into the past. By looking at tree rings and other paleoclimate records, we're able to gain really important perspectives about how climate has varied and changed in the past. And having done that, it's clear that what we're experiencing now is not natural. This is undoubtedly being caused by human activities, by greenhouse gas emissions. The more we see these extreme events piled on top of each other, and not just in the western United States, but globally, the more I think the reality of climate change becomes inescapable. And it feels absolutely overwhelming and sad. And we're going to have less water, increased wildfires, and more extreme heat waves. But it's also motivating. We need to continue to push for urgent action on climate change. Daniel Swain, a climate scientist at Institute of the Environment and Sustainability at University of California at Los Angeles, said, "This is really, really bad here on the eastern side of the Rockies. Here in Boulder, Colorado, we're seeing record high temperatures. That's the case in other parts of the state and in other states. And we're seeing smoke plumes, not from local fires, but from fires in Arizona and Utah. I think for a lot of people, it's traumatic. The fires we saw in the last couple of years were really awful. And this year, it seems like we're on the same trajectory. It kind of feels like deja vu. It does get rough sometimes talking about these things year after year. I live in the West, and all my family pretty much lives in the West. Most of my friends live in Western United States. It's where I grew up. And seeing the landscape scale transformations that are happening here and seeing how it's affecting people is overwhelming sometimes. But actually, to me, the most distressing part is that this is very much in line with predictions. Climate scientists have been repeating essentially the same messages and the same warnings since before I was born. Climate change is a major contributor to, if not the dominant factor in, a lot of the changes that we're seeing out in Western United States and elsewhere. And it just is going to keep getting worse unless we do something about it. And so far, you know, we have yet to do the kinds of things on a large enough scale that are actually going to make a meaningful difference. Catherine Hayhoe, a climate scientist and chief scientist at the Nature Conservancy in Texas, said, "The extreme heat and the wildfires aren't surprising, but it is just surreal to see what you only ever saw before in your research studies and models actually happening now in real life. And you're almost dumbfounded by the speed at which your projections have become reality. Climate change is loading the weather dice against us. We always have a chance of rolling a double six naturally and getting an intense record-breaking summer heat wave. But decade by decade, as the world warms, it's as if climate change is sneaking in and taking one of those numbers on the dice and turning it into another six, and then another six, and maybe even a seven. So we're seeing that heat waves are coming earlier in the year, they are longer, and they are stronger. Still, public opinion data shows that there's a disconnect, where even though about 72% of the people in the United States say global warming is happening now, only 40% say they think that it will affect them directly. But we actually did a recent study looking at climate and weather extremes. And we found that really hot, dry conditions are the only thing that most people in the United States directly connect to climate change. So right now is a really important time for scientists to communicate with the public that climate change is here, it is now, and climate action matters."
diverse range of programs, spirituality, Eastern Tales, Roundtable Discussions, Culture. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Leader's speech in meeting with members of Assembly of Experts. This is part of a speech delivered on August 31, 2006 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with members of the Assembly of Experts.
The last point that I would like to raise is the concerns that I have about the issue of slandering during the time of elections in our country. If the goal of some people is to blind and destroy a deviant line and orientation, this is not the way. Such behavior will not fulfill the purpose. And it is clear what the viewpoint of Sharia is in this regard. Normally, such moves are not free of unintentional insulting, slandering, lies, and ill-informed statements. The Holy Quran says to us, "Why did not the believing men and the believing women, when you heard it, think well of their own people and say, this is an evident falsehood?" The Holy Quran, chapter 24, verse 12. Why do you not trust one another? Why do you not believe one another's statements? Well, if you do not believe in someone, you can avoid implementing their ideas and thoughts. But the act of slandering is very bad. What I want to say about the issues of elections is this. Of course, there are other points about the issues of elections, but I will raise them later on. Everyone should take care not to contaminate elections, particularly the Assembly of Experts elections, by creating an environment for slandering, by accusing individuals and damaging their reputation. This should not be done either in Islamic seminaries or in Tehran and provincial cities. This is one of the issues which everyone should pay attention and attach great significance to. This should be done so that Allah, the Exalted, opens the path and guides the people and their hearts.
Thank you.
hearts of the people are in the hands of God. It is Allah, the Exalted, who bestows on human beings hope, motivation, and the determination to move towards the right tasks and goals. So we should ask Allah, the Exalted, for these things, and we should rely on Him. We should carry out our responsibility and entrust the result to God. Whatever Allah, the Exalted, wants will happen. I hope that what He wants is the product of our intentions and our good deeds. And I hope that it is what we want. We should move forward in this way. I ask Allah, the Exalted, to guide all of us towards the right and straight path. I hope that He will make our great, revolutionary, religious, and intelligent people more capable and successful in carrying out their responsibilities. I hope that He will increase on a daily basis the achievements that we can witness in scientific, technological, political, economic, and other areas. Greetings be upon you, and Allah's mercy and blessings.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah.
In the limelight.
UK's Downing Street came under renewed pressure to ditch Prime Minister Boris Johnson's controversial planning reforms, which many backbenchers blamed for the humiliating loss of the Buckinghamshire seat. We'll prepare for you an article written jointly by Heather Stewart, Peter Walker, and Aubrey Allegretti, under the heading, Senior Tories Warn Boris Johnson Blue Wall is at Risk After By-Election Defeat. Senior Conservatives have warned Prime Minister Boris Johnson a swathe of seats in the Blue Wall across the south of England could be at risk, as his party was gripped by recriminations in the aftermath of the Liberal Democrats' shock victory in the Chesham and Amersham by-election. Downing Street came under renewed pressure to ditch Boris Johnson's controversial planning reforms, which many backbenchers blamed for the humiliating loss of the Buckinghamshire seat. The by-election saw a historic 25% swing to Ed Davies' Liberal Democrats, enabling their newest MP, Sarah Green, to overturn a 16,000 majority in a constituency that had been Conservative since it was created back in 1974. A Tory MP representing a south-eastern seat said the upset was worrying, and that the Liberal Democrats had shown they could successfully rally voters against the government's planning reforms, which would strip powers to object to developments away from local residents. They said, "There is going to have to be some consideration about either combating that messaging or changing the policy. Backbench rebels now believe that they have the numbers to defeat the legislation in its current form, though the bill is unlikely to come to the House of Commons until the autumn. Fears are also running high in local government, with one Tory source warning Number 10 needs to wake up quickly to the fact that its build, build, build agenda is going to destroy the home county's blue wall. Speaking at a victory rally in a Chesham community hall on Friday morning, the Liberal Democrat leader Ed Davey said, "Do you know what? I think there are many Conservative MPs across the country who are now worried." He said, "People have been talking about the red wall. I think that after Chesham and Amersham, they'll be talking about the blue wall and how the Liberal Democrats are the main threat to the Conservatives in huge swathes of the country." Reinforced the point in a very literal way, the Liberal Democrat leader Ed Davey stood for the television cameras in front of an actual wall made of blue plastic bricks and proceeded to knock it down with an orange mallet. Davey said there was quite a bit of anti-Boris feeling on doorsteps and concern about the direction of the Conservatives under Boris Johnson's more populist and culture war-focused leadership. Davey said, "For them, the emperor has no clothes," adding, "Those sorts of traditional liberal Tories care about foreign aid, things like free school meals for poor kids, and worry about civil liberties, and they're just being ignored." Johnson himself rejected the idea that he had neglected the south of England in his bid to conquer seats such as Hartlepool, which the Conservatives took from Labour in a by-election last month. Calling the result disappointing, Boris Johnson said there were particular circumstances at play. Aides suggested he was referring to HS2, the high-speed rail line which passes through the nearby Chilterns. Speaking to Sky News, Boris Johnson claimed it was bizarre to accuse his party of being unpopular in the south of England, pointing to the fact that he had won the London mayoral election twice, and insisting the Conservatives are a great one-nation party. Prime Minister Johnson also defended the proposed planning changes, calling them sensible. He said, "What we want is sensible plans to allow development on brownfield sites. We're not going to build on greenbelt sites. We're not going to build all over the countryside. But I do think that young people growing up in this country should have the chance of home ownership. And that's what we're focusing on." However, one backbench MP involved in campaigning against the planning reform said, "It was nonsense to blame the loss on HS2 alone." He said, "It is related to planning. Those members of parliament who went canvassing and saw the reaction on the doorstep know this to be the case. We're being sent a message." Some Conservatives privately blamed complacency at Conservative headquarters for the loss of the previously rock-solid seat, but others pointed to Boris Johnson's stance on several issues, in particular the planning proposals. Robert Hayward, the Tory peer, told The Guardian, "It is clear that there will be a marked impact on Robert Jenrick's intended planning legislation, because the message will come back for the whole of the South East that this is what opposition parties are going to play on." One Tory aide admitted, "I don't think anyone in the Conservative campaign headquarters expected such a big win for the Liberal Democrats. They said building houses was important, but we shouldn't go against our core Tory voters in the shires, who could end up deserting us if we obsess too much on an unpredictable electorate in the northern red wall. We won them over in 2019 with a mixture of Boris and Brexit. next time could be very different. Former Conservative MP for South West Hertfordshire, David Goak, expelled from the party by Boris Johnson over Brexit, said, "There is a realignment going on in British politics, and that has favoured the Conservatives. It gave them a big majority the last time around because the first stage of this was the fall of the Red Wall." But David Goak cautioned by saying, "There are a group of seats, up to 30 or 40, where the Conservative vote is not Johnsonian. Considers the government to be pretty populist, not focused on the interests of taxpayers, not sufficiently pro-business, and that vote is soft and it's vulnerable." Highlighting Tory losses in the local area at recent local elections in very prosperous middle-class commuter areas, such as Hitchin, Harpenden and Bishop Stortford, he added, "The current trajectory of the Conservative Party is not particularly sympathetic to those areas, and the local residents are not particularly sympathetic to what the Conservative Party has become." The Liberal Democrats now have 12 MPs, 8 of them women. In her acceptance speech, Sarah Green, a marketing company owner, said, "Together we have said enough is enough, and we will be heard, and the government will listen." Labour's vote collapsed to just 622, behind the Greens on 1,480, suggesting Labour supporters had swung their weight behind the candidate most likely to beat the Conservatives.
The World with Reporters.
Just a quick one. When are you going to...
He might have emerged the loser in a bitter internal power struggle inside Downing Street. But Dominic Cummings is reminding his former allies inside the Conservative Party that a wounded animal is at its most dangerous. Prime Minister Johnson is standing by his health secretary, even after Cummings leaked messages where Johnson branded the man in charge of handling Britain's COVID crisis as expletive hopeless and suggested handing over some of his responsibilities.
Dominic Cummings is doing this because he's his own axe to grind following his sacking as Johnson's political aide. It's clear I don't think we could trust him as far as you could throw him, but at the same time he's shedding light on what seems to be a chaotic and inefficient government whose handling of the beginnings of this pandemic was truly disastrous in terms of the number of people dying, the highest in Europe.
In an escalation of tensions between Cummings and Hancock, MPs were told back in May that the health secretary had lied to the prime minister about testing hospital patients before they were released into care homes at the start of the pandemic. In a 7,000-word blog, Cummings described Johnson and co. of rewriting history and said if number 10 is prepared to lie so deeply and widely about such vital issues of life and death last year, it cannot now be trusted either on COVID or any other crucial issue of war and peace.
Hell hath no fury like a special advisor scorned, and Dominic Cummings is making life inside the Conservative Party for his former colleagues an absolute nightmare. After all, he's the man with an agenda and the inside information to follow through.
Cummings's refusal to slink off into the political wilderness must be a source of great concern for the government, who must be dreading what he will reveal next.
I don't think he's particularly bothered about the damage he might inflict on the Conservative Party, or indeed his former boss Boris Johnson. Clearly his anger over his sacking has overcome any reservations he's got.
This might be unfolding like a poorly written telenovela. But the public will do well to be reminded that these individuals at the center of this political drama, they were the ones in charge, making decisions that may well have cost thousands of people their lives. Amina Taylor, London.
For ages, joining the North Atlantic Treaty Organization has been a long-sought dream for Ukraine. NATO countries have a mutual defense pact, meaning if one nation is attacked, the others will join in their response. By this, Kiev, which has been engaged in a domestic conflict with pro-Russian forces, is seeking to get NATO's help to get rid of the militias. On Monday, the alliance's annual summit in Brussels wrapped up with the release of a joint communique that reaffirmed NATO's 2008 decision for Ukraine to become a member through a Membership Action Plan, or MAP, without setting a timetable. Shortly afterward, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky appeared to announce a change on Twitter shortly before U.S. President Joe Biden began a news conference in Brussels where he was attending a NATO summit. He tweeted that NATO leaders confirmed that Ukraine will become a member of the alliance. But NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg made it clear that no such action was imminent. Stoltenberg said, "To agree on the membership action plan, you need a consensus among 30 allies. This was the focus of the summit." Biden stressed that Kiev does not have the go-ahead to join NATO. The U.S. president said Ukraine needs to clean up corruption and to meet other criteria before it gets into the action plan. However, he affirmed Washington's support for Ukraine's territorial integrity. Biden also met with its Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin for the first time in Geneva, Switzerland on Wednesday. The two discussed a number of issues, including resumption of diplomatic ties and the return of expelled envoys, but apparently made no mention of Ukraine's membership in NATO. On Thursday, the Kremlin expressed concern over talks for Ukraine to join the alliance. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said Ukraine's NATO membership would be a red line for Moscow, noting that Russia is watching the issue closely. Ukraine has been locked in a tense tug-of-war with pro-Russian forces ever since the Crimean Peninsula rejoined Russia following the ouster of Ukraine's president Viktor Yanukovych in 2014. The conflict on the country's east has killed more than 4,000 people.
The General Confederation of Lebanese Workers, the country's labor force umbrella, called for a nationwide strike across the country. Several streets in major cities and a number of key highways were blocked. Banks, several large companies, and many shops also remained closed. Head of the General Labor Union stressed in the gathering that all institutions of Lebanon are threatened, as are the citizens of the country.
We need to face this collapse of institutions through social solidarity and cooperation to preserve what is left of Lebanon and the workers of the country. This cannot happen without a salvation government which confirms political stability, paving the way for economic solutions.
The crisis has deeply stressed the budget for subsidies on essential goods. Power cuts have increased in many areas, which are seeing only 2 hours of electricity per day. People are lining up at gas stations for up to 2 hours to get limited liters of petrol in their cars, while supermarkets and pharmacies are running short of supplies. The General Labor Union in Lebanon has declared that all members, including economic bodies, Organization of Merchants, and even the Association of Banks in Lebanon, back the strike and allow their employees and workers to take part in gatherings and protests. And while this strike is to protest the main dire economic situation in the country, it is also to put pressure on the political factions to form a much-needed cabinet. Parliament Speaker Nabi Hibiri has declared an initiative to help mediate stalled talks to form a government. The disagreement is mostly prominent between Prime Minister-designate Saad Hariri and President Michel Aoun, who don't see eye to eye on the general framework of a cabinet lineup. Members of the parliament close to the speaker believe this initiative is the last resort.
This initiative is the last opportunity for the Lebanese to see some agreement on a cabinet. All political factions inside Lebanon backed this proposal, and it was also endorsed by regional and international sides, since it provides a plan for a comprehensive solution. Speaker Barry has put forth a practical framework and tactical steps to try to loosen the knot on debated issues, but this requires mutual trust and reaching a common denominator where the collapse will continue and we will all regret it then.
The World Bank has labeled Lebanon's economic crisis as one of the world's worst since the 1850s. Lack of accountability has also been one of the major reasons behind an extended, multifaceted crisis in Lebanon. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Jerusalem is closer than ever is the slogan of a symposium held in Yemeni capital Sana'a to discuss the Israel's long-lasting atrocities against the Palestinian nation. The organizers say the recent 11-day war has proved that the third generation of Palestinians is more capable of standing against Israel. They say the resistance has got stronger despite the normalization efforts of some Arab states.
The axis of resistance was able to prove its existence despite all the conspiracies of the closest people. There are Arab countries that are considered close to the Palestinian resistance, but unfortunately, they continue to stab the resistance through normalization with the Zionist entity. And these countries are the ones who seek to weaken and bring down the resistance. Today, the third generation of the Palestinians is capable more than ever of defending Palestine against Israel's aggression.
The gathering also hailed the support of allies for Palestinian cause, including Iran, who they say has always backed the Palestinian nation overtly. The participants said Iran has played a key role in changing the balance of the war between Palestine and the Israeli regime.
Since the establishment of the Islamic Republic of Iran 40 years ago, it has made Palestine its main issue, as Imam Khomeini declared that Iran's independence will not be complete without the liberation of Palestine. The Palestinian cause is at the heart of Iran's political strategy, and despite the conspiracies that Iran has gone through, it still supports the Palestinian resistance and has been a key factor in changing the equation of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict.
The Palestinian cause is also an issue of consideration for several other Islamic states, including Yemen. Last month, Yemen has launched a fundraising campaign to support the Palestinian resistance groups, even though they are going through a tragic humanitarian situation due to the ongoing Saudi war on their country.
People here believe that armed struggle is the only way to stand against aggressors. They say the recent victory proved that the Palestinian nation is on the right path to regain its rights. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Push back, constrain, and engage. These are the core elements contained in a European Commission policy proposal which has just been presented relating to Russia. The 27-country bloc's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, says the EU must be realistic.
And prepare for a further downturn of our relations with Russia, which are right now at the lowest level. And this further downturn is the most likely outlook for the time being.
The new policy proposal suggests the EU must push back against Russia's human rights violations and international law breaches. This mostly relates to Ukraine and Georgia. The EU must constrain attempts by Moscow to undermine EU interests. Here the document talks about cyber attacks. But the bloc should engage with Russia on COVID-19, climate change, travel visas, and efforts to save the JCPOA Iran nuclear deal. Big claims require big evidence, and the EU has never come forward with a shred of evidence, the Kremlin insists. There are many experts who believe the EU is going down the wrong path.
The West has an interest, an institutional self-interest, in aggravating the crisis with Russia, a crisis which need never have started in the first place, but which was aggravated by the way the West supported the most radical elements in Ukraine.
Borrell was asked about the EU's dependency on Russia's energy. He responded, there is no mention of this subject at all in the policy document. The Commission proposal contains a provision for additional sanctions on Russia, but EU leaders are divided over the effectiveness of such measures. They will make their final decisions on the matter during a summit here at the European Council next week. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
After two perilous days and a difficult night, 69-year-old activist Nicholas Georges has returned to ground level after mounting a huge crane overlooking the US Embassy in London. Armed with little more than a Palestinian flag, Georges risked his life in the daredevil stunt to raise awareness of Israeli crimes against the Palestinians.
Every day, day in, day out, demolishing more and more Palestinian homes. The Palestinians have no rights, even their electricity and their water